And it is time for Plan B with Rebecca Davis, who joins us as she has for the last week or so on Zoom. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, John.
I must, well, there's no must about it, but I think I should tell you that I am no longer as instinctively hostile to the Spurs sponsorship deal as I was yesterday when I read your story and when we spoke yesterday afternoon. I'm now thinking that we, not that I'm for it, not that I'm persuaded it's a good idea, but I'm kind of more open-minded about it at the moment.
What tipped you over?
Just the thought that, well, first of all, I listened to an interview that Bruce Whitfield did yesterday evening with the professor of sports marketing, who said it's potentially a brilliant idea. And then, I don't know, just talking to other people informally that I know in the advertising world who said don't dismiss it out of hand. You were listening to the press briefing given by the acting CEO of SA Tourism. I'm speaking to him after 4 o'clock. What did you take from that?
An extraordinary press briefing, and I think any of your listeners who were listening to it would have to agree with me. I can not recall ever having seen the CEO of a parastatal or a government agency harangue the public in the manner that Themba Khumalo did this morning. At one point he appeared to have been getting messages from his aides or whoever, I don't know, telling him to tone it the hell down because he apologized if, quote, his intensity was causing discomfort. But this is after lecturing the public that we didn't understand anything about football or tourism, basically. But what worried me about it most, John, is that he claimed that the reporting on the matter has presented the deal out of context. That's what he said. He just described it as a misunderstanding that needs to be cleared up through dialogue. But the point is, nothing he said contradicted anything that is out there in the public domain. I mean, there's no dispute that that money is going to be allocated through the tourism marketing budget, for instance. No one sensible, I think, is saying, you know, that, oh, well, if we spend it on that, then we can't spend it on houses or whatever. I mean, there has been some suggestion. I see the DA's Dion George actually is suggesting that they use that money for diesel. But the point is, these are red herrings. It was clear from the briefing that the delegation was planning to fly out tonight in order to sign the deal. And that is despite the fact that it is also clear that Treasury has not been briefed. So the question is, how was the delegation exactly planning to do that in a lawful manner if the reporting had not come out about this? That has not been answered. There is a lot about the saga that still smells fishy, not least the level of kind of outrage and anger from the CEO, who also said that the person responsible for leaking these documents within SA Tourism would be found and isolated. A very chilling word, if you ask me, because to do that was un-South African. I mean, personally, I feel very grateful to whoever the whistleblower was within SA Tourism who had concerns about this. There's a lot about this that worries me, John, but I am also seeing that the presidency allegedly is saying that President Ramaphosa should not be assumed to be in support of the project. And if that is true, then that is very likely the end of it, because we have seen that when President Ramaphosa decides to put the brakes on one of these projects, then it generally tends to hit the waste bin. So I'm sorry if for you and everyone else getting excited about this deal, but I feel the probability now is that it won't happen. And, you know, we can argue till the cows come home about whether that's a good or bad thing, but there is reporting still to come, I must inform you, about the back end of this deal.
Meaning that there are suspicions that at least some of the money will not flow to Spurs for the sponsorship, but will flow into the pockets of people whose pockets should have been kept shut against deposits of such money?
That is, I can't say more at this stage, but the assumptions that many of us have that there are people who will be benefiting from this deal is precisely what is being investigated at this point. And there are some credible leads in that direction.
Yeah. Look, if that is his attitude, that's the attitude he's going to display when he talks to me after 4 o'clock. Well, you know, what you need to do, if you genuinely believe in this idea and if the professor of sports marketing at San Francisco University and other people in the advertising marketing industry think it's an idea that should not be dismissed out of hand, then you defend the proposal on its merits. You don't start attacking messengers, because the minute you attack the messenger rather than defend the message, you're making yourself vulnerable to the kinds of suspicions that are automatically there.
That's right. Let me give you an example quickly of one of the merits of this argument that he actually gave in all seriousness. He said 35 members of the British House of Commons, 35 MPs, are Spurs supporters. If we had that when the pandemic happened, we would have been able to sort visas out and everything in that period where we couldn't get off the red list if we had been Spurs sponsors. Please help me make sense. Join the dots on that for me, John. I've never heard a more absurd argument in my life.
Yeah, it is an extremely absurd argument, that one. One of the things that Goldman was saying to Bruce Whitfield last night was that there is clear evidence that Rwanda's sponsorship of Arsenal has led to a significant increase in UK-based visitors to Rwanda, and that their £10 million annual spend over 4 years looks to be an extremely sensible investment. So, anyway, I'm looking forward then to the reporting, which has still to come. And I didn't see a report on this, but you tell me that Kenny Kunene has been found guilty of hate speech for calling Julius Malema a cockroach.
That's right. So it was a TV interview Kunene gave in November 2021, where he called Malema all sorts of things, but among them was a cockroach. And it is this particular insult that prompted Malema to take Kunene to the Equality Court. Yesterday, I believe, the judgment was handed down that Kunene is indeed guilty of hate speech and has to apologize, and the NPA will decide whether to charge him. Now, it's an interesting verdict, in my opinion, John, because, you know, the whole argument that's normally made about the use of the word cockroach in particular is that it is intrinsically and specifically offensive in an African context because of Rwanda, right? That in the Rwandan genocide, famously, Hutu extremists were encouraging their country folk to kill Tutsis by referring to them as cockroach. And this is the argument that Julius Malema's lawyer made, that it is this kind of automatically a sort of genocidal term. It interests me, though, that the fact that Kunene called Malema also a little frog, for instance, is not taken as offensive, even though that is also arguably dehumanizing language. I mean, it's literally calling him an animal. And it strikes me basically that we are really just figuring out the boundaries of hate speech here, John. If you consider that this is just 6 months after the judge ruled that kill the Boer was not hate speech, protected speech, but Kunene's reference to Malema as a cockroach but not a frog is hate speech. I think really there is a lot of work to be done in this area to also make this make sense to the public. And obviously I'm not a fan of any dehumanizing language. We know that this is dangerous, but it does seem hard to work out exactly what the limits are legally.
Yeah, it's. I wish this was a question which had an easy answer, but it doesn't. And I suppose we have to, by trial and error, try to work our way towards something which seems sensible. And I was reading a story earlier today, slightly different story from the one that you want to talk about, but it did introduce me to, for the first time, I think, to the idea of buccal fat, because I was reading about the dangers of buccal surgery, of surgery to remove the buccal fat, which is the fat on your cheeks, from under your cheekbones. Apparently, this is the new trend in reconstructive surgery, or aesthetic surgery, is removing that buccal fat. And now I learn, courtesy of the always in touch Rebecca Davis, that there is something called buccal massage.
Yes, that's right. So you're right. Buccal fat reduction surgery is indeed all the rage. And not just in, you know, far-flung Hollywood lands, John. I have had these discussions with actual humans here in Cape Town about doing this. The dangers being, as you say, well, you haven't said, but it basically, you're going to look like Edvard Munch's painting The Scream in 2 years, because it made your whole face kind of suck inward. Anyway, a buckle massage, aka an inner facial, apparently really is the rage among the Jennifer Lopez's of this world. And what happens there, John, and this sounds just so relaxing, is that someone massages your facial muscles by sticking their hand inside your mouth and sort of tickling upwards. They describe it as a non-surgical alternative for those who want a more sculpted look, and that it releases the tension of facial muscles. Now, the problem is, John, I'm struggling to see how having a dermatologist's gloved fist in your mouth could release any form of tension whatsoever. Is that a picture that seems likely to you?
Well, I have a suggestion, Rebecca Davis, that when it is time possible for both of us, and if there is a buckle massage therapist in Cape Town, you and I take along a video crew and we subject ourselves to said buckle massage and we publish the results on the Daily Maverick and on the Cape Talk website. Are you up for it?
John, it is a date.
Look forward to it so much. Rebecca Davis, thank you very, very much indeed.